moving the church on into Germanic. Now, somehow get that translated so that you know what it is. Discuss the usage, how the word's used in the English language, which is to say you define, you place limits on the usage of this word, but be sure to translate it. If it's Greek, for instance, translate it into Germanic, and probably it would be a good idea to translate it into Latin also, but you got to sort of bracket it, you pin it down, and don't let it wander all over the place. And remember, if it's Greek, the chances are it's there's an awful lot of variation in the way it's been used and bandied about. The neighborhood picked that word diagnosis. Not that that's the name of a tactic, but that it'd be pretty hard to get agreement between many people on what that's used for. Okay, then the next task is to show how this tactic is qualifies. You got to define it first, then you got to qualify it as a form of madness. If you can't do that, then you've got nothing to do, which means that you show how it's unreasonable, unpleasant, and unceasing. Don't bother whether it's unusual or not. It's almost a matter of it can't not be unusual. But that is not as important as making sure that you are dealing with a case of recurrent, unreasonable, unpleasant behavior. And when you find case studies, if the case study is not about a recurrent or a chronic instance, then that's not a useful case study. In other words, if somebody reports a one-shot deal, that's of no use. So what? So we learned all this about this one-shot deal, but that's not an instance of madness. They say at most it's temporary madness, and that's useless information for our purposes. Then, or included in this study, in this report, should be some kind of speculation on what this behavior does for the labeled patient. So what does he get out of it?
Our own speculation or the author's?
Where you get it, I don't care. As long as you figure it's useful speculation. If you don't think it's worth bothering with, for instance, if somebody says that this is all due to a broken ego, and you don't figure that that's worth mentioning, then don't mention it.
This is where that first question I asked about justification. Do we have to justify any speculation on the basis of some kind of objectionable person?
You can't justify speculation.
Or, okay, what is excluded? Do we have to back up speculation?
You can't back up speculation.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know. You can't do either of those things. Justify or back up.
What criteria do we have to act within to report that behavior is being utilized by the related patient for certain purposes? Do you have to prove, how do you point out what they're doing is productive behavior
guessing now, I haven't really thought this one through, but my guess is that there can't be any criteria for using, that the idea of criterion is not relevant to speculation. Criteria have to be visible things.
Okay, so if I said, for example, I use that example there, I said, what I find amnesia. So I say, this person, by not being able to remember their name, or what they do for themselves, is to get out of being responsible for themselves. For example, they get a ticket, they go to court, and the judge says, well, you have this ticket, what's your excuse for this?
Yeah, that's...
It wasn't me, because my name's not John Smith, it's Tom Schmutz or something.
There's, yeah, that's...
Let's
say speculation can't be right or wrong. It can only be useful.
So if it's useful.
Yeah, if it's useful, that's not, if that's what you mean by criterion, then that's the only criterion. There are no others that...
How do you determine it's useful? Useful to study for the future?
Well, if it's satisfying to you, if it hangs together, if it doesn't violate your principles.
What are you looking at?
How do you know whether a sentence is useful?
On what basis do I speculate?
You don't have faith. One doesn't speculate on bases. Speculation is not done on bases or on criteria.
So we're just guessing.
That's right. You're guessing.
No.
That's another name for it.
Any old wild guess.
You're making a fiction.
No,
it
has
well,
to be useful.
You have to use fictions. There isn't any alternative. Well, not any fiction will do for me, but maybe will for you.
But if so, what will determine it doing for you?
Well, you're not doing this for me. But if you are inconsistent in your explanations. Then I say, well, where do you get off assuming, where do you get off blaming the an archetype for this? If I'd say that's a useless sort of thing to do. You have no explanation for this particular activity, and so you dredge up Jung's hypothesis that archetypes do it. And I say, well, that's fortuitous. That doesn't square with the rest of what you said. You're being inconsistent. And I submit that that's a waste of time. So the only criterion would be consistency that I can think of.
Consistency with the facts or...
No. Within your own... You've got to take a perspective, point frame of reference, a point of view, a standpoint, you know, a whole lot of names, a system of ideas, and I don't see much use in the so-called eclecticism when it comes to explaining things. First of all, I haven't seen anybody do that. Secondly, it would take an enormous amount of paper and time and effort to go through, crank through all of those different perspectives. If you take one perspective, one point of view, one frame of reference, within that frame, that's the way to go.
Would you do more than one?
Be my guest if you want to take a couple of them. But I... I don't see much utility in that, frankly. In a sense, but look at the way the question is posed. What does behavior do for the labeled patient and to the unlabeled patients? Presupposes a frame of reference, does it not? For one thing, it presupposes that it is doing something for the patient that is tactical. So you're limited already in the perspective that you can take.
Well, the question sounds to me like you want us to evaluate it from the communication perspective.
If you can find another perspective that allows for a behavior doing something for the patient, do it. But this is an exercise in applying that idea that mad behavior is functional. I suppose that the Freudians see mad behavior as, certainly they see it as functional. I mean, it was Freud who invented the idea that mad behavior is functional. Still answer that question. I suppose in a way you could even take Skinner's perspective. Say, what does this do for the patient? Well, it gets him rewards X, Y, and Z. That's what it does for him. And these are the rewards. So the first question is what is the behavior? Define it. What are you confining it to? The second one is to qualify it as madness. The third one is to say what its function is. What is the function of the symptom? Okay, then the fourth question that I think would be worthwhile to answer is what other tactics does this person use besides the one you're studying? And I think that's a very important question. If you don't answer that question, then the impression is given that there is such a thing as a, excuse the expression, monosymptomatic fix.